your legal right over your home is whether you rent, live in an apartment, or whatever. And, you know, you can cancel any claims that may have been made. We deal with a lot of missionaries that are calling us from all over the world. I just sent a letter to, there's a guy in Japan that's just dying and probably will come and see me. Another guy down in Mexico. We've had people fly from Europe, just fly over. Missionaries fly over for a week. They're counseling on airplanes, fly back to Europe. And God has really honored us in helping these people in this situation. But many of them were not prepared for spiritual warfare. The college they went to, the seminaries, did not prepare them. In fact, we had a mission where all of the missionaries from that field flew into Sioux City, all of them. And all of them, to be in that mission, had to be a graduate of a seminary with a graduate degree. You couldn't even be accepted in that mission. And they were being wiped out by demonic spirits, in fact, the whole field of a whole country, because they never understood spiritual warfare. And all of a sudden, it makes sense. We're just teaching spiritual warfare, and the lights are coming on. And like one of the missionaries turned to another one and said, when you go down to our seminary where we have, where we're training African men to be pastors, you get creepy feelings. All these families got creepy feelings. No one ever talked about it. I said, why do you suppose? I don't know. I've never been there. I don't know where it is. Why are they all getting creepy feelings going to the seminary? Well, they built the seminary along the river. It's very beautiful. But Africans used to offer live sacrifices to water spirits right there. That's no wonder they're having creepy. No one ever dedicated the land to the Lord. No one ever prayed away the demonic spirits. And here, this was a heavy place of worship, but they put a seminary. And all the missionaries are getting creepy feelings, but no one's talking about it. Stuff like that. It's amazing. Now, cleansing the home. Because if there's something going on in the home, what's the first question you should ask? Especially if it hasn't gone on before. Have we brought something in our home that's causing some problems here? This is really hard. And this is this guy's question. It's a good question about, you know, can you get carried away in cleansing a home? And I would say absolutely yes. You can get way carried away. You know, I'm not wearing that coat that I wore yesterday because I looked and it was made in Taiwan and it was probably made by somebody that worships spirits. So I don't want to wear the coat. It's probably got demons in it. Do you hear what I'm saying? You know, or this Chinaware, it came from Japan, and how do I know? You know, maybe we better not eat off this dishes or whatever. I love having, well, you know, I've got a sort of a strange sense of humor. So I was pastoring a church and we had a bunch of hog confinement razors, and we just happened to get to the Gadarene, and so I get up with a very, very straight face at prayer meeting. It was quite a large church, and I said, you know, I've been quite concerned. It's obvious from this passage of Scripture that hogs are susceptible to demon possession, and so some of the hog farmers are going, you know. And I said, my real struggle is, if you would eat bacon from a demonized hog, you know, what would happen to you? And some of the old ladies go, oh, you know, oh, I never thought of that. These hog farmers are just about to pull out their support and leave the church and go somewhere else, you know. But you see how ridiculous you can get with all of this kind of stuff, and yet there's reality there. When, you know, when there's extremism one way, there's truth another way. Obviously, when an item comes into your home and you have a question about it, and the item may have some real value, it may have been something that was given to the family, it may have been a part of an estate or something, but you're wondering about it, we encourage families, first of all, if you get it and nothing happens, that's a real key, that probably there isn't any problem. Number two, you can always dedicate it and command anything associated to leave. But if you do that, there still seems to be something going on, and you think it's possibly that, take it and put it in the garage. Now, take it out before you destroy it, take it out of the home, stick it in the garage, and ask God to not allow, if there's something there, to harass the family. And if the nightmares stop, or, you know, those things stop, that whatever kind of a you know, thing that's going on stops, there's a good idea, a good probably connection that the thing that you put in the garage really had an effect when it came into the home, that it brought with it this kind of problem. Then I would get rid of it. Another thing is, I would not have occult objects, even if they are not demonized, that would cause someone coming into my home to have wrong concepts of Christianity. My mom died, and she had a kitchen witch. And they were real popular. There was a little witch on a broomstick, and you hang it in your kitchen. Do you remember those? You don't remember. And my sister said, do you want it? Well, I wasn't afraid to take this little kitchen witch that they sold at every Walmart and take it home and put it in the kitchen for fear we'd get demons. But what would people think coming into our home seeing a witch floating around in the kitchen? Is that really, you know, is that really the kind of a message and testimony I want in my home? So there may be nothing really wrong with the object as far as, but its representation would not be something that I feel that ought to be in a home of a dedicated Christian. So it's, you know, it's not just the demonic part, the thing represents something. You know, and it may be very representative to someone from that culture. Because all the, if you go to my office, I have all these Indian things on the wall behind my desk. And every one of them is from a different Indian group that I've worked with. The one thing that bothers, ATI kids is a stick. It's about this long. It has antlers coming out of it here. The antlers are painted white. It has feathers hanging down here. It has red and fur on it. And then it has, rawhide cords coming down this end with beads in it. And it's on top and it pulls in all of these things together. It's a Sioux Indian speaking stick. And I tell the kids, because I see them looking up at it and looking up at it and looking up at it, and I figure, well, they're bothered by it. And I said, well, it's a Sioux Indian speaking stick, and if this stick starts talking, I'm out of here first. And then the rest of the family, whoever can get out the door, get out. But it's not that the stick speaks, but the Sioux Indian speaking stick is what they use if you wanted to speak in a tribal meeting, they passed it to you. There's nothing demonic about it. See, just because something is Indian or something is of a different culture doesn't mean it's demonic. We've got to realize that. You know, you don't throw away stuff just because it's cultural. But it's the cultural significance. That's significant with the demonic world and the spirit world. Even though it doesn't have any demons in it, if someone of that culture would come in, what are the messages you're giving to them? And so, you know, any Indian coming into my office and looking at the stuff on the wall, even though it's not of their tribe, there's nothing on there that has any significance to the spirit world. It's just culture, beadwork, different things like that that's on there. I think I don't have to give you any horror stories of people. Well, I'll give you one horror story of people I had things. And this is where you have a check in your spirit and you don't deal with it. I got a telephone call from Hawaii, and the person said, you know, I'm wondering, Mr. Logan, I get your prayer letter. I've never met these people, I don't think, until just a couple of years ago. Or maybe I didn't meet them then. But I was on the phone with them on and off. But this home was the most expensive home on that particular Hawaiian island. Very gorgeous, very, very beautiful, very wealthy family, born-again believers. And they were having, you know, I don't know, with K. Arthur Bible Studies or Bible Study Fellowship, you know, and Campus Crusade. Different groups would use their home because it's so gorgeous in the view and the windows, and this place is just phenomenal. And but they collected Kachina dolls. Now, Kachina dolls, if you're from Arizona, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They're hand-carved wooden dolls that the Indians use in spirit worship. They represent demons, these dolls, and people collect them. They're very expensive. You get a real Kachina doll. It's very expensive. And they collect them. They're very well done, very pretty, and all that kind of stuff. Well, they collected those dolls, plus, because they had money, they had a Mayan and Aztec ritual knives, bowls that blood was caught in, and all this kind of stuff. You know, that they had all this stuff in their home. And she said, should you have that stuff in your home? And I said, no. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You know, something that was used to catch a human blood to give a sacrifice to somebody, it's not something I want in my house. I don't care how much it's worth. Are those dolls that the Indians, that have spirits with? So I said, no, you shouldn't have them. Well, she told her girlfriend that they shouldn't do this Christian girlfriend, that they shouldn't have this in their house. And what happened was one day the husband came home and stabbed his wife to death, stabbed her 7 times and killed her and then committed suicide. There is no reason. The family cannot figure out why. They were born again, walking with the Lord, no financial problems, no immoral problems,
Nobody was going to die. You know, it wasn't a Jack Kevorkian type of thing. Out of the blue, this murder and suicide took place in that home. And she called me, "Do you think there could be a connection?" I said, "Yes, I'm afraid. I think there could be a connection, some type of demonic spirit connected with this thing." Well, she told the kids about it. She said, "You know, your kids need to think about this. This is not good." Her own, those people's kids, they were older, and about the stuff the parents have. And I made a suggestion, "Why don't you give it to a museum? And let the museum have the demons. This stuff ought to be in a museum anyway. You know, why have it in a home? These are expensive things. Just give it to a museum and let them show that stuff, because they do that. Give it to the Indian Museum and the other." Well, they didn't do that. They wanted this woman to use the house for Bible study. She said, "I can't go in it. Number one, every time I went in the house, I always got this oppressive feeling, but it's like, how can I be oppressed in such a beautiful home? It's just so gorgeous." It didn't make sense. And how would you get the feeling in a home that's just absolutely beautiful? And she said, "When I think of my best friend laying in the bed being stabbed to death by her husband, I just can't do Bible studies there." Well, they rented out the top part of the house to three girls. And these girls would hear, a girl would get up and say, "Now, why did you move the toaster?" And they said, "I moved the toaster." "Did you move the toaster?" "No." "Well, it's not there, and I know I had the toaster over here." "Well, maybe I didn't, you know. Why is the coffee pot on the table when I had it on there to plug in the morning?" So things are moving. That's not unusual when there's demonic activity in the house, that things move around. I was in the home of the assistant chaplain to the chaplain of the United States Army. You can't get any higher. The chaplain is in Washington, D.C. The assistant chaplain is at Leavenworth, Kansas, where they train guys to be generals. And they live in a three-story house, and stuff like that was happening in the house all the time. Things on the third floor, be on the first floor. Things on the first floor, be on the third floor. All the time. With no one moving them. My wife and I moved, could you send some of them to our house? So here's you guys want to carry this out? Move this stuff into the truck. You know, I'm an old man, and you move it out for me. But, you know, it's spooky when all of a sudden you realize that something's going on in this house. Then what would happen is they started to hear people walking up the stairs. But there was nobody there. The lights would go on and off, all by themselves. And they got an electrician. I mean, here's a multi-million dollar home, and nothing wrong with electricity, nobody walking up the stairs, things moving. They would get someone from the church to pray through, and they'd come and pray through and cast all the demons out, and everything would be okay for a while, and then there'd be the stairs, and things are moving. And finally, the girls are going to move. They said, "We don't want to live in this house. This is just a creepy house." And so this lady found out about it. She didn't know that all this was going on in the house after this woman had died. And she said, "Now what's happening?" She said, "Well, the thing that's most frightening is the people walking up the stairs and no one is there. And you can just hear them as clear as anything, almost like stamping up the stairs, but nobody's ever there." So she called the son and said, "You know, when you were cleaning out the Kachina dolls and all of this Aztec and Mayan artifacts, where'd you put them?" He said, "In the closet under the stairs." And she said, "You realize what's going on? These girls are being attacked by demons associated with that stuff. You need to get rid of it." And the guy, and I got that testimony went out in my prayer. And the guy went out and they burned the Kachina dolls and they broke all this stuff. And he was just, there was just a release coming to him. And they prayed through the house, and you know what? No more lights on and off, no more things moving, and nobody walking up the stairs. And I can tell you, we get this stuff all the time. I mean, this may be new to you guys, but it's not new to us. We hear it all the time. We get, you know, thousands of phone calls, and people are calling us because things are not normal. That's why they're calling us. It's not a normal kind of thing they're faced with. So often a wife is sensitive, or if you're asked to go in someone's home, pray before you go in. You know, there's something strange going on in this place. Just pray and say, "Oh God, give me sensitivity here as we walk through this home. If there's something that shouldn't be here, you know, if there's something that isn't right, just let me know." And women, I am not very sensitive to spirit stuff. Well, let me give you one more. Because this was really significant. I was speaking at the Tell City Baptist Church at the very first ATI conference I ever spoke at. And while I was speaking, I was still, at that time, connected with the mission. And Bill had me come down, because Bill and I had been friends from the 60s, had me come down and to share there. Well, my wife was in Warrington, and in the middle of the night, she gets a phone call from one of the vice presidents of the missions and another guy that was in leadership, that there was demonic manifestations in a house of this family where the kids were going to Bob Jones. If you know what kind of, you know, we're talking, not talking about a wild family. We're talking about a very conservative family. And there was demonic things, and they weren't sure what to do. But they knew my wife could tell them what to do. So my wife told them what to do, and they went and did it. Well, they didn't realize it worked, but it did work. And so when I came back, because I was down in Tell City, when I came back, I'm going to meet with this family. Well, we met with this family and began to hear the story. And I brought each kid individually, like 6 or 7 kids, and every kid told me a different aspect of this terrible demonic harassment that was going on in their house. It was a brand new home. They moved into this brand new house. The first thing was the 21-year-old boy in his bedroom. He had a water bed, and his bed was downstairs in the basement, but didn't have a window in it. And so he had a big fish tank that always had a light in it. And he was in bed, and he was reading. Now, I don't think what he read had significance, but it was by Tolkien, The Rings, The Three Rings, or whatever. He was reading. That's what he was reading. And all of a sudden, this thing popped up at the end of the bed between him and the doorway. And it was black. It was shapeless. It had his football jacket on with the sleeves pushed up and had a chain with a symbol around its neck. And it was between him and escape. Well, this kid played football, and he wasn't about to be in the room with this thing that he didn't invite in there. So he jumps up. He runs across his water bed, and he's going to smash it and get out the door. And when he goes to smash it, it disappeared, and the jacket fell to the floor, and he runs up there. Mom, Mom, Mom! What, what? And she says, there's something in my bedroom. It's black, and oh, don't tell the kids, you'll scare them. And your brothers and sisters, you probably were sleeping. I wasn't sleeping, Mom. I was wide awake. I was reading a book, and this thing popped up. And she said, no, no, I'm sure you were sleeping. It was a nightmare. Well, one day his brother was playing Nerf basketball. His bedroom door, because I was there at the house, his bedroom door and the door that came from the kitchen downstairs in the basement were side by side. And on the kitchen door, they had a little Nerf thing, you know, the kids playing Nerf basketball in the basement. Well, his door, when it opens, squeaks. I've heard it. I opened the door. So this door is squeaking open, and out comes this black figure with this chain and this symbol around his neck, and this kid's playing Nerf. He thought it was his brother. And he saw this thing, and I mean, he almost didn't open the door to get upstairs. I mean, he opened the door, he thought, Mom, Mom, there's something downstairs in the basement, and all black, and described it. Well, this thing is making, walking through the house at night, walking down the hallway, opening and closing doors, and all this kind of stuff. But there's kids in here, I won't tell you what prompted them. I mean, this is going on, and they're not doing anything, but what the thing did is so terrible, I don't want to tell these kids, so I can tell them. But anyway, that's what prompted them to go and see me. It was so bad. To call the mission to see, obviously a mission ought to be able to do something about demons, you know, and they don't know what to do. And, so we went to the house, we walked to the house, and this was a very conservative house. The only wicked thing in that whole house was a TV. It was the only wicked thing they had in the house. I mean, you want to go, what's wicked? You know, what could possibly be? There was nothing. I mean, this house was clean, there was no pornography, there was no questionable anything, nothing in this house. And yet, all of them, all of these kids were terrorized. All of them saw them many, many times and were terrorized by this thing that they would see. You know, from 21 down to 6. And they're all telling me the same story, not together. I didn't want them together. You know, I wanted to hear them all do it separately. Well, with that, it just doesn't, it didn't make sense that this was going on. So what we did is we prayed through the house, number one. And we prayed through every room. I walked through every room. And you know, God gave me a rhema for every room. It was so wonderful. I'd walk in the room and God just would put a verse on my heart and I'd pray that to God and ask God to cleanse this room and dedicate this room to Him. And go into another room, God give me another rhema. I mean, never had that happen, but room after room for this whole house. And they're all different. God just put scriptures in my mind. I would pray the truth of those scriptures through the room. Then we dedicated the ground that the house was built on. This was a brand new house. No one had done any evil. There wasn't any strange deaths or murders taking place. In this guy with a haunted house, there were 2 or 3 murders or strange deaths in that house or something before they moved in, that pastor in that house. I mean, the history of that thing was something else. You know, people were killed strangely. And we dedicated the ground and asked God to put a hedge of angels on the property line and not to allow anything to come into that property that was of the enemy. You know, that God would protect that family. And that did it. Nothing anymore. Nothing ever happened. But let me give you this. This is the neat part. I was asked to do some speaking and warfare in Africa. And so I went to Ghana, Africa, and then from Ghana I went to Nigeria. And in Nigeria I was in Kaduna.
And Kaduna is in the middle of Nigeria. And then from Kaduna, we went up to, and I can't remember the place, it's where Sudan Interior Mission first started in Africa. I went up there. But that's a creepy place. It's where Lawrence Arabia was and all that. It was really creepy. And we went up there, and I just had oppressive feelings. And I don't get them. I mean, I'm the last to get an oppressive feeling. So if I get one, it's got to be oppressive. Because I'm just not that sensitive in my spirit. I'm not sensitive with my eyes to demonize people, but not in my spirit. I see it, not feel it. But I was feeling all kinds of oppressiveness there and so on at this place. And so we went to the old city, which was even worse. And then I found out that's where the Muslims were persecuting the Christians. Because the church I spoke in, they had burnt it one time and killed the deacon. After I was there, they burnt it again, killed the pastor who was getting a doctorate from Fuller Seminary, and killed a number of people. I think 10 people were murdered in a Muslim cleansing, so on, taking place there in Nigeria. Well, we went to the dye pits in the old city, and there, and I could think of Lydia. Here are these wells in the ground, holes in the ground, with purple in this one and blue in this one and that, and these pits have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years where people dyed cloth. And they, you know, they knot them and tie them. I don't know how they do it. So they get, you know, different colors. And I have a beautiful African shirt that was dyed like that. You know, different designs to the dye. And so this cloth, of course, he's pulling up is all wet. Well, you don't want to buy wet cloth and put in your suitcase to fly home. But he had materials that he had dyed at his house that was dry. And so we went to his house. And we're walking up the street that wasn't hardly any wider than this with a ditch in the middle of it that was open sewer. To his house, and you're just walking on the edge, and the houses are all made out of red sand kind of thing, you know, hardened sand. Walked into his house, one little room. Then in the back, which was a little small room with a wall around it, with open, that he had this material, some apple boxes and the material there. And I didn't want to buy any material because I knew that we had never used it. And so they were looking at this. But he had nailed on this wall old African jewelry. And I'm going through the jewelry, just looking at the necklaces, and all of a sudden, there is the necklace that these kids, every one of them, described to me that was around the neck of that demon. And I took it off, and I said, how old is this? And the guy said, well, I think at least 300, 400 years. And I thought, I want to buy this. I mean, that's my first thought. And take it back to see, because the kids described this triangle. I mean, they described it. I mean, because that's the one thing that stood out was this necklace that this thing wore. But isn't it interesting that here's a necklace that kids in Warrenton, Missouri, by St. Louis, describe all the intricacies of that necklace exactly like the one I saw in the heart of Africa. I didn't buy it. Not a good idea, okay? I think I'll buy this, take it home, you know, and the plane crashes and Logan's holding onto the necklace and they find his body. Not a good idea. Okay. And then delegated authority. This is number 11. Authority can be delegated to someone else. This is a dad. Now remember, this whole thing is the authority of a father, all the different areas. There's 11 at least specific different areas we talked about where a dad has authority. See, it can be done anytime. And when you leave the home and go to work. You know, and you can state to the spirit world, my wife now is in full authority while I'm gone. And the kids need to know that. Your mom's in full authority while I'm gone. And we'll talk a little bit about when kids, when does a mom ever say, wait, your dad comes home? And there's a time to say that. And the kids are praying for a wreck or something. They don't want dad to come home because he's probably not fit for human consumption when he walks in the door. You know. But there is a time. I mean, some mothers use that all the time, so my mom used that all the time. We just hated to see my dad come home. But you don't want that, you know, that you just dread your dad coming in the house. Is there any questions about this kind of thing that we talked about? We have 5 minutes. If I was going to shoot from my head, I know what I would tell you in the past, but I just got to give you scripture and you make the application. Go to Ephesians. Because I'm not a warfare person, that's not my background, I'm not that flavor in the body of Christ, I'm in the same ministerial group as John MacArthur, if that gives you some idea where I'm coming from. I mean, I am so squeaky that I make noises when I walk. And so this warfare thing is just, to me, it was storefront you know, pass me a rattlesnake kind of person, and I wasn't into rattlesnakes. And, you know, reptiles is not my thing. And so I just never thought, I mean, if you'd have known me when I was teaching at Bible colleges, that I'd ever be doing what I'm doing, I'd say, you guys are crazy. I'm not one of those kind of people. I'm not an Oral Roberts. I'm just, you know, that's not Logan at all. I'm the opposite. I'm the other way. But when a missionary had voices speaking out of him, and I was in charge of all the missionaries and their well-being and spiritual walk and all of that, I didn't know what to do. But all of a sudden, I knew that what was happening was not right. I mean, I knew. No one had to tell me. I took demonology 101 in Bible school 100 years before that. But no one has to tell you. And you meet someone that's really manifesting demons. No one has to draw you a picture. Your spirit, the hair in the back of your neck is one thing. Just go by the hair in the back of your neck. Why is it standing up? Or sticking out? You used to stand and see what happened. I've seen so many demonized people, my hair just all flopped out. Yeah, stood up and walked away. Logan, you got the smarts to get out of here. I am. But what I did is, I didn't want to become weird. I was really fearful of being weird. And I didn't want to go overboard, you know, to get way off on the deep end. And so what I did is I went to the New Testament, read every passage that had to do with the spirit world and marked it in yellow. And I have yellow lines. Then I went back to that which I wasn't sure it was obvious. I did Greek word studies on those verses. I wanted to know from a biblical perspective. Now, I told you I have almost 600 books on spiritual warfare written by some really solid people and some not so solid. I've done my homework. I've done my studying. But I looked up a word, and wandering here. I'm leading you to a point, is that there are scriptures you don't look up, and I should have. I mean, it's just, I knew. I mean, obviously, who wouldn't know what this word means? I mean, you don't have to be real brilliant. And it had to do with the armor of God. And it says in verse 11, okay, the kid with the striped shirt on, you haven't read it yet, have you? You get a chance. Stand up and read loudly.
What chapter?
Ephesians 6, verse 11, the armor portion.
Put on the whole armor of God.
Okay. Now, so somehow the whole armor of God is to protect me against Satan's schemes, right? I mean, how do we know? Because he just said so. Now, the word put on, would you look that up in the Greek? Does that look like something you'd need to have some Greek, real Greek understanding of? No. I mean, who doesn't know what put on means, right? You guys are all put on this morning. No one showed up not put on, right? We don't have any streakers in here. But I thought, put on. And so people had asked me the very same question. You asked me, what about the armor of God? Am I supposed to pray an armor prayer every day? You know, it's just, I would tell no. Because I would have been a really good Catholic or Episcopal or something. You know, tell me the prayers to pray and the beads to turn and I'll do it and fine. You know what I mean? Just get me my little box and I'll do my thing and that's good. I know that that's a danger in me. And so I thought, you know, I know people that we have armor prayers we give out. We get three different armor prayers. One by Warren Wiersbe, one by Charles Stanley. Charles Stanley says he puts on the armor every day over his pajamas, you know, before he gets out of bed. And then the big armor prayer that's been around for a long time. We give all three of those out. And so I say no, because it says, okay, stand up and read another verse. Read verse 13, would you?
Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand the evil day, and having done all to stand.
What's the very next word in the next verse?
Amen.
Yeah. See, after you've done everything to stand, keep on standing. Now, the key here is, again, he says, put on the full armor of God, that ye may be able to stand in the evil day, having done all to stand. Also, I read that wrong. I mean, I read it with a Western view, and we approach an Eastern scripture with a Western mindset. We got to realize we miss a lot because it's not our culture. And this was written to people in the Middle East. And they have a better grip of some of the stuff that's said than we do because we take a Western thing and try to make it Western, and it wasn't written Western. It was written to people in the Middle East. Put on the armor because of the evil day. I read that because we're living in evil times. That's not what he's saying. There's a definite article, the, in the Greek. The evil day. And that is the day of violent temptations and attacks whenever they come to you with extraordinary strength and the desire to yield is strong. That is an evil day. We're going to see as we begin our study that when Satan left Jesus, in Luke chapter 4, it said Satan left Jesus until the opportune time. The King James says for a season, but just go in the back, check out season, you're going to see it's opportune time. And Satan's opportune time is my worst. When I don't need the enemy to show up, guess what? Guess who's at your house for dinner? Right. And when you've had an evil day, often your wife does. Now, my wife's evil days are Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and my evil days are Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays. But often, when you have a bad... you ever seen that, Dad? You come home, you're not fit for human consumption. The kids have been demon-possessed all day, and your wife is ready to resign. And you're not ready to deal with this. You know what I mean? You're just ready to climb all over these kids. And then they're not focusing on behavior. They're focusing on, why is Dad always mad? No, Dad, take it easy. Dad. Like that little kid. Dad. Dad's home. Oh, good. So the armor that put on is put on every day or put on as you do clothes. I never would have checked that out in the Greek. So I was telling people wrong. I think, put on the armor when you have an evil day. I need to put on the armor because I may have an evil day. You see the difference between what I was teaching? Because I didn't want to get into some kind of a ritual thing. And yet he said, put on armor, put on the armor of God every day. Now how you put it on, you may want to vary the prayers and so on, but you need to put the armor on, is what God said. It may be an evil day. You don't know what today's going to be. But you need to be prepared for the day. So I think it's the same thing. If your kids need a reminder, number one, that mom's in charge here, and I'm going to check with her tonight how you responded to her authority, they may need to be reminded, little kids, more often. But I would remind the spirit, well, maybe you should put on the armor. You know, as I go today, my wife's in charge here. But if you want to attack this family, you come find me. Because I'm going to take those attacks.